Welcome to False Bottom Girls, a podcast about the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer and brewing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hudson, owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, sensory expert, home brewer, and advanced cicerone. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of False Bottom Girls. I almost said I'm Rachel. I'm Jen.
I'm Rachel.
That's Rachel.
You're
the owner
Jen.
Of Pilot Brewing. I am
Woo-hoo!
Jen.
Welcome
not
to
the owner of a
not
brewery.
The lucky you.
Right. So, when we were talking about ideas for episodes, one of the things that I said to Rachel was I think it would be cool if we did an episode where you just talk about what it's like to open a brewery, because Pilot had been in planning for several years. You've been open for a few years now. And
oh man, I could make 5 episodes out of this.
Right. But yeah, I know that we had our episode with R2 kind of talking about how she got started in the beer industry. Like, we do get asked a lot about, how do I get into the industry? I'm interested in opening my own brewery. Like, how did you know when it was time? And just stuff like that. And obviously, I've never opened a brewery. Anytime I broach the idea of opening a brewery, Rachel is very quick to be like, absolutely not. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
She's the only one I can be honest with.
But yeah, I mean, your experience is one that is probably more common in the industry, right? Like, it's not, you don't have like 100-barrel brand new system that you just opened up with.
For sure.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I was, I'm very prepared for this episode because I have been talking about this a lot lately. I do the Brewers Associationship Mentorship Program.
Mm-hmm.
This semester, or not that, whatever, a couple weeks ago. And both of my mentees are opening breweries. And I specifically are helping with like financial side, like brewery and planning side, whatever. So I have been talking about opening a brewery and everything I would have done differently for a couple weeks now. So
I did like the first round of mentorship with the BA, and remember that there were two mentees I had who had the classic story of, we started homebrewing a year ago in our garage and our friends really liked it, and so we're going to open a brewery. And by the end of our first phone call, I felt like I needed to follow up and apologize because I freaked them out so badly. Because they're like, how many kinds of glassware should we have? And I was like, is your state, can you self-distribute? They're like, oh, I don't know. And then, they're asking like all these questions. I'm like, no.
Asking the wrong questions.
Yeah. I'm like,
yeah.
you're not even close to being there. Yeah.
You don't need to worry about that.
Yeah. And they're like, and these are the beers we're going to brew. And it's just like, no, like whatever. And I had similar experiences when I worked with the Craft Maltsters Guild and would visit maltsters and like malt houses and planning. And I would ask like, what's your timeline for being open? And they'd be like, oh, like 6 months. And I'm like, okay, so just based on me talking to a bunch of other malt houses, that 6 months is going to be more like 18 months. And like, you need to be ready for that, because it's not going to happen on the timeline you think it is, because there are a lot of things that are outside of your control that you just have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I'm not the one who's opened a brewery. So Rachel.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we opened in 2018. I quit my full-time brewing job to like May of 2017. We opened August of 2018. That gives you just a little bit of a timeline right there. And that wasn't the whole timeline. That was, I'm ready to quit my job timeline.
Right.
So that was about, everything takes longer than you plan. Everyone says that. So there's definitely this thought of like, no, not me.
Right.
I can make it happen.
Yeah.
No, that's silly.
It's like, yeah,
definitely
no, you.
Yeah. 100% you. So like I knew very quickly, like when I started working at Noda after we moved to Charlotte, we bought our home. We weren't leaving. This was the place we were going to settle down, at least for a long while. So I knew that maybe 6 months into Noda, I was like, I'm going to start writing this business plan. 2000, no, let's say beginning of 2016. That's when I started writing this business plan.
And
And I,
something that I don't know if our listeners know is that writing business plans is one of Rachel's favorite things.
I wouldn't say that I just come home and sit down and write a business plan,
Right,
but
but you do get excited about the
I do get a
opportunity.
little bit excited about writing a business plan.
I
And what's
can't tell you
really
how many
funny,
times I've had an idea and Rachel's been like, "You know what you need? You need a business. I can help you write a business plan."
don't worry, I got a whole idea for us. And that's another episode that we have to do it long in the future because, but anyways, and it, yes, it involves a business plan. But my brother and I used to like do this. So like when we were younger, and not like in college, we had this grand idea. We were going to open this restaurant. It was going to be beer, wine, and whiskey. It was going to specialize in all three. We were going to have this awesome bar. We wrote a business plan for it. Like we would just be like, let's write a business plan. Let's write a bit. Like even my husband will even joke with me. He's like, yeah, you guys just like you just write business plans. I'm like, yeah. What else did you do? One of my college classes, we had to write a business plan. And what was my business plan? It was making beer. Did I know I was going to
Yeah.
open a brewery? Nope, no idea. But we made two beers, and the labels had the face of my teacher on them, and the name was very much based around his name of each beer. I don't remember what it was, but I definitely got an A on that project. And so, anyways, I love a business plan. But yeah, so it's about 2016 from, okay, I'm sitting down, I'm working every day really hard in my free time to get this on paper because it's a lot of looking up costs. Some suppliers don't want to share cost with you because you don't have a business. Like it was really hard to get supply numbers from malt companies or just supply companies. Not necessarily malt in general, just like Brewer Supply Group, Country Malt Group, all this stuff. They don't want to, unless you have like a TTB in place, they don't want to give you a price guide because it's kind of just like a lot of, I don't know why. Maybe it's extra work they don't want to deal with because you're just not, you're only up in planning. I don't know. That was an issue sometimes. There's a couple, and just figuring out what the fuck to do, because you're like, okay, I can gather costs. Like, this is something I can wrap my head around. I am not a finance person. Jeff wasn't, and he like only is because of the brewery, and he's not a finance person, but he can do it, everything that
Right.
he's done. So you got to have like, you got to know that you most likely cannot do it all. No one can normally brew, run the front of the house, run the books, do all the red tape. Paperwork, knowing what's bullshit and what's not. Like I had, sometimes there are a lot of things that you can do on your own that somebody will try to convince you to pay them a lot of money to do for you, like filling out maybe TTB forms is a really good example. People like to hire other people, and that's fine. If you really do want to hire, do it. But you can do this yourself. And TTB is actually very accommodating when it comes to helping you. Now, for you, those who don't know, TTB is who you file with the Tobacco and Tax Bureau of Alcohol, something like that. They have all your taxes for your alcohol, and you have to file with them to get a license to brew. There's a specific order that has to happen into. You can't just be like, oh, I want a brewery. You have to have an actual building. The building has to have actual walls and a lockable door. Learn that because I filed too early. And they're like, I was like, okay, here's everything. And they're like, wait, do you have like, we had a plan, we had our building. They're like, does that building have like walls and a door right now? We're like, no, it's just like a shell. And like, well, you can't, not yet. And we're like, oh, okay. So they will help you do all of that. They're very accommodating. It just takes some of your time. And again, if you have a lot of money, sure, but you're gonna need that money, let me tell you. Like save where you can. Jeff is really good. My husband Jeff is really good at learning what he needs to like figure out what he needs to do when it comes to like installing the glycol system and the piping for the glycol. Do as much as you can do yourself within your limits, and that's legal. If you have to have electricity work due, you have to hire an electrician. Don't you can't like cut the corners. You can go become an electrician, but it might be easier to just hire one. And so I felt like opening, well, getting the project done, we did a good job of like really reining in costs, doing things ourselves. You know, we built the bar when we could, you know, ourselves, like did little projects like that that we could do. But, you know, when we came to the floor, we had professionals do that, even though technically we probably could have. I definitely, you know, we made a deal with our landlord. We do rent lease our space. We rent it. You can own the building, it's so much better, for so many more reasons than just paying rent. But we pay a lot in rent. We pay, man, 40, almost $40 a square foot. It's almost $6,000 a month in rent. And we're in a walkable area. Like, it's not industrialized, but you know what, I know this other brewery getting started at the moment, and they are able to buy the building under a different LLC that they're creating and rent it to their brewery for $1,000 a month. So that is a very smart way, savvy way to kind of get around that, where I am just shelling out rent, heavy rent. You know, you do what you can to maximize the best you can and work with the situation that you have. You know, where I'm in an area that is a busy neighborhood walking area. It's
It's like
literally,
a hip neighborhood
yeah,
too.
literally places that have been there for a long time are being sh shoved out due to high rent increases. You know, it's it is what it is at this point for me. There's nothing I can do to get out of it except ride my lease. Or if I want to get out of my lease, I can find someone to take over, sublet my lease. Or I can let them do that, the landlords, and then pay for the lease until they do that, which obviously why people are like, why would you want to do that? Well, here's a secret about having a brewery. It does not make as much money as you think it would. Shocker, I know, spoiler alert. This is not a cash cow. I don't know the secret to opening a brewery that's cash cow. Yeah, you know, it's a very much a hobby project or passion project. That's why we got started. Of course, we thought we were going to make $1 billion, but we didn't think we're going to make that much. But it's a hard life, and you know, it's you got a lot of bills to pay for, and it's a lot of juggling, figuring things out. You know what? Because you don't, we're not as good at this when we opened as we are now, right? And one thing I think that people, when they open a brewery and kind of take for granted, is their honeymoon phase. Everybody gets a little pop for the first couple months when they open, and then shocked to see that's gone. And you really got to use that to your advantage. If I could go back, I would have established so many weekly or monthly or whatever events before we started to happen right when we opened. So people got used to them during that honeymoon phase and came back instead of getting through it, then starting all that, because, you know, I got a lot going on. And you're human, and you can't just do everything that by yourself. And that's one thing that entrepreneurs make a big mistake on, is trying to do everything themselves. And what happens is just things start to suffer or go in a roller coaster of suffering and then doing okay. And then one other thing suffers. And then, you know, you got to, if I could have, we have a company now that does all of our our marketing and our events, now known as Marks. They do all of that. They're really great. They do our can labels, social media. They are very affordable, probably too affordable. I hope they don't listen to this. They sure raise a price. But they are so great. They keep me sane. I wish I had found them from day one. I wish I would have hired them. I going marketing company searching can be very daunting on its own. You get a lot of people out there. One, they do different things. People specialize in PR versus digital versus organic. And I feel like this company really focuses on organic, which is what you need as a small growing business. It doesn't matter if you have 1,000 followers, if they're all bots, what is that going to matter?
Right.
And anyways, wish I would have hired them from day one. It would have made everything so much easier. But again, I can do it all, right? Because I can do events. I got Canva. I can do
Yeah, I can post on
graphics.
social media.
I can
Yeah.
post on social media. Yes, I can do that all, but can I do it all at once? No,
Yeah. And
absolutely
can you do it
not.
all at once well,
No.
effectively?
No, I would be like, okay, I got to make a post today, and then like get to like 3 o'clock and I'm like, fuck, I really need to make a post today. It's like, you got to outsource some of this stuff, you know?
Right.
And
And I
sometimes
know.
hiring people on the outsource can be cheaper than hiring in-house too.
Right. And I know. You know, I was one of the first employees at Pilot, and I definitely remember like that. You know, like the opening weekend, and it's like the whole beer community in Charlotte is out, and you know, it's like all of these like everybody you care about and know in the community is there, and you know, they're there to support you. And it was like, oh, this is great. This is finally open. And then, yeah, I do remember like there being days when. You know, we would be like in the tap room, and you would say like, why aren't there people here? Like, there's people other places, and you know, yeah, just like that realization going through that, being like, oh wait, okay, so that was like a wave because it's new and it's novel, and now Pilot's just here, and Pilot's open now, so we can go to Pilot anytime, and that's, you know, that's something that. I know a lot of breweries have run into where they're just like, hey, like if you like your local breweries. You need to go to your local breweries. You need
Amen,
to
man.
go and you need to buy beer from them and take it home.
You really
And
do.
because it's not always you know, you take it for granted. And there's breweries here, you know, and there have been breweries in Charlotte. Then when they close, I'm like, what? No. And then I think, okay, well, when was the last time I was actually there? And yeah, so like the just kind of taking for granted, like, okay, well, we can always, that will always be there. That's, you know, that's just like an institution in the community now. And it's like, no, that's really not.
And just to give the listeners an idea, the only reason Pilot Brewing is open right now is because we signed a 10-year lease. We're 6 years into it almost. We lose less money than we would pay for the lease at the moment. Luckily, my husband's job can afford to cover that loss. So until we lose more than the lease, we're going to continue to stay open. And we never, I don't think we will. Like, I think we might continue to lose. We lose about like 3,000 a month. Yeah. So we do it out of passion, keeping our lease going till the end. And we're probably going to close at the end of that. So let that be known. That is a common story with your local brewery. Some people are able to sell for one reason or another, some people just shut it down. But it's hard. It's a hard life. It's a hard job. You're working all the time. And you get to a point of like, how long do I really want to do this?
Right. And I have to
Yeah.
imagine too, as an owner, you know, like you have employees and I know Pilot like has good standards for, you know, that was something that when you opened, you were like, this is my goal for every employee. We're offering health insurance. And like that was something that you put a lot of time and effort into of like, I want Pilot to be a good place for people to work. I want people to make enough money to be able to live.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to have to worry about health insurance, you know, and things like that. And a lot of places don't do that. And I, you know, kind of just like view their employees as like a revolving door, like who cares? Well, you know, it's a passion industry, so you'll work for less because don't you love beer and beer is fun. We don't need to take care of you because we can just get somebody else in. And Pilot has like not at all that view of employees. Like you want to invest in people. You want them to stay. You want to teach
Absolutely.
them everything that they want to learn. And I just have to imagine, too, as an owner, having that, just like that additional burden of like just doing right by your employees and making sure that your employees are taken care of when, you know, like you said, like when you're not in the black yet. And like just, you know, understanding that. It's not just you and your husband, you know, and like when it's in the planning phase, it is
Oh,
like,
yeah.
oh, it's just. You know, is this is our project, and then you have other people now whose livelihoods depend
Oh
on
yeah,
this.
absolutely. It's definitely something you think about. I would say that in the beginning, we probably overhired, been a little over and zip ambitious and kind of what we wanted everyone to do. You know, you were there. We had this plan if we wanted people to like be brewing and work the bar. And like that was the full-time job. And we definitely didn't need as full many full-time people as we hired. We just didn't know. And like, I think some of them kind of naturally weeded out in one way or another anyway. So things worked out. But yeah, I wouldn't do that again. And I told that to my mentee. I was like, don't do that. Don't. That's a very, it's a lot of training. And what I found that out, it was that is, you know, we had, let's say we had a full-time person, they would do two shifts in the brewery, three behind bar. That's two shifts in the brewery a week, trying to learn these new things and remember them and not having that much practice because they were doing everything. Like maybe you clean kegs and then maybe we brew and then maybe we clean lines and then maybe you do this and then maybe 5 weeks later you clean kegs again. Like you don't remember.
Right.
And it was very inefficient, cost a lot of money and training and equipment like boots, just buying them boots, like $250 each, you know?
I still
Like,
have my boots for what it's worth.
good. Yeah, take care of them. They'll
I
last.
do. I do.
They're great
So I
boots.
still have them like 6 years later.
Good. I hope everyone does. They're awesome boots. But like it's important. You gotta have that equipment and all that. You know, it's just a lot of money. So I would say like one of my mentees now, they are taking a very slow approach to how they want to incorporate it, staff. And I think it's very smart. You gotta have people. I mean, you can't just open up day one, be by yourself. You can't do that.
Right.
And there's no secret to hiring the right person. There just really isn't. Like, yeah, if you're gonna weed out people in the interview process. You can feel people's vibes and who's good for you, but you don't really know what you're getting until you start working with that person. And there's no way to know. People do ask, like, how do you get the, I'm like, you don't, you take a chance on someone, you trust them until they give you a reason not to, and you treat them like a person.
Right.
Shocker. Spoiler alert. Just treat, let's assume everyone's treating it with everyone with equal respect and dignity.
Right.
It all starts there, really. But if you treat people well and give them a rewarding environment, they're going to return the favor. They are like naturally, they're going to want to. They're going to want to be there. They're going to want to stay. They're going to want to learn. It can be hard too at Pilot. We don't have the most, you know, we're not that big. We're a three barrel brewery. It's me, my husband, two, Rachel, our brewer, Colby, our sales guy, who also does bar. And then we have like five part-time bar. Greg is, I want to do this little side story right here. Shout out to Greg, because we talk, we say sometimes on this episode about we have stories about home brewers, guys who've been home brewing for a long time, getting hired by a brewery, and maybe a brewery doesn't want to hire a home brew. Greg started at Pilot Brewing as part-time bar. He's been doing that at some other beer bars and beer ordering and all that. He fit in perfectly. Also happens to be a big at-time home brewer. For over getting to know Greg, talking to him, I could tell that he has got a good system or setup at home. Like he's put some time into it. He brought me some beer. He had an infection. We figured out exactly where. He brought me good beer. I was like, and you know, at Pilot, we get everyone to brew a little bit on the small scale. Well, it got to a point where I was just like, do you just want to learn how to brew on this system and just brew when you want? And he's like, yeah, I love to brew like every other week. So now I have the example of the guy that we have been talking about this whole time who
Yeah,
can't get a job at a brewery
the exception to
here. I've got the exception to
the
the rule. Now, don't get me twisted. If Greg had come in and said, I want to be a brewer here, I'm a good home brewer, I don't think that would have happened. But he took this other, it was a natural growth, you know, and that is how you get into brewing. This is the first time he's ever brewed at a brewery, like besides his home. And he's so good at it. And he's been entering beers into competitions. And it's great for me because I don't have to be there to let him brew. Like, that's what I want, everybody. If you want to know the secret, I am looking for someone that can do the whole job and I don't have to be there.
Right.
But it takes time to get there. You have to invest into your people And I got to figure Greg out because I didn't hire him for that. I hired him for something else. And over time, we got to doing that, and that worked out really well. And that's a part of promoting within, too. You know, I think Noda Brewing, for example, where I used to work, I think now, like, they only promote within, like, 99%. Like, there's always an exception to the rule, but it wasn't as, like, you could get a job as easily. But, like, I feel like you could before that, before I worked there. There's, like, as an owner, when it comes to starting your brewery, there's a big money saving aspect to that. One, that person already knows your culture and you're all about your brewery and
Yeah,
can
and you
skip all that
know,
stuff.
yeah, and you know them.
And you know them. Exactly. It's saving you some training right there off the bat.
Right. And that's something just quickly that, you know, I always tell people when they talk about, you know, like, why should I invest in beer education? People are just going to leave. And it's like, well, what's worse, that you train someone and you leave and they leave, or you don't train someone and they stay?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you
Absolutely.
invest in your employees will stay.
And they might leave because somebody else wants to train them.
Well, I can also say one thing that I really admire about you and, you know, Pilot as an employer is that you want your staff to be educated. You want to train them. You want them to understand all of the processes and stuff. Like, you're not just like a kind of, again, like a turn and burn sort
Yeah.
of, you know, brewery. And like, I've worked for a brewery like that where it's just like, no, we're more of like a restaurant model kind of thing. And like, we're not going to invest in people because there's so much turnover. And not only do you do things like pay for your employees to go to conferences, go to classes, but you also will give people, you know, like if they're, you know, if they're brewing that day and, you know, they have a Cicerone exam coming up or something, you'll be like, okay, go sit in the office and study.
Oh,
And it's
yeah.
like on the clock, you can just go sit down and study for a little while. And then, you know, and that's something that a lot of places don't afford people the option to do, where it's like, well, we want you to be Cicerone certified. You need to figure it out on your own
Yeah.
outside of work when you're not getting paid. And it's like, well, but if it's a requirement of the job, I should be allowed to like study on the clock. And that's something, again, a lot of people don't do that, but at Pilot, you all do, or, you know, you'll be like, okay, you've got downtime right now. Go learn something. Like, go get this book off the shelf in the office and tell me about oxidation. Like, you know, you've given your employees like homework before of like, okay,
I
there's
have.
not really a
Write
whole
me an
lot to
essay.
do. Yeah, I want you to talk to me about hot side aeration.
And that is
And
how we found a piece of incorrect information on a certain website.
it's true.
Because we were like, the fuck did she get this from? And isn't that fun? See?
Yeah. But
Saul.
I love that you all do that. And that's something, you know, that when you opened, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but being an education-focused brewery is something that it seems like was always a priority for you all. And now it's like Pilot is also has a very good reputation for, hey, if you want to learn more about beer, go to Pilot and you can sit at the bar and talk to whoever is behind the bar,
Yeah.
and they're going to be able to talk to you about beer. And you know, you can have like, when I worked there and I worked behind the bar, like, you know, people would come in and be like, yeah, like I tried to homebrew and my whole apartment smelled like a fart. And I don't know what went wrong. Should I look at my water profile? And I'm like, no, you should, like, you're so far away from having to worry about your water profile. But you know,
Yeah.
that was something that's like, people know you can come into Pilot and sit down and ask questions, and the person behind the bar is probably going to know the answer or will be able to tell you where to go to get the information.
Yeah, I really did want that. It was super frustrating to walk into breweries and ask them like what I thought was a simple question, and they didn't know anything, you know, like how big the system was or anything, like just basic stuff. And that's kind of where I got the idea of like, okay, well, now I want everyone to brew and work the bar so they know things. Although, good idea in hindsight, I would, as a, you know, someone is opening a brewery, if you want tips, don't do that. Just train your people the way they need to be trained and include them in brewing, but I wouldn't like full 50-50 split. Just
Yeah.
I got a little crazy there.
Yeah. Well, and I know, like, as when I was working at Pilot, like, I hate working behind the bar.
Yeah.
And
And that's what
well, I shouldn't say I
happens.
hate it. I
No,
don't,
but that's what
it's
happens. You
not my
get some
favorite.
people who prefer one or the other, and they
Right.
do better at one or the other, and then they leave to go to do jobs that are the one that they prefer.
Right.
And you know, that is part of pilot too, is we don't have ever-ending growth. You get, you know, we're small. You get to a point where it's just Rachel, if she works at pilot to the day we close, the job she's doing now is that job that she
Right.
will be doing for the next 4 years.
Right.
And then she, I will get her, help her get a job wherever she else wants to go. And Rachel has this very unique start in the industry where she got thrown into everything, you know, keg cleaning, packaging, cellaring, brewing, a little bit of everything every day. And she does really well with it all now and does everything, but that's not how most people start. And I feel like I got this one person who reached out to me because they had a conversation with Rachel about what it was like to work at Pilot and her kind of journey. And I think this person was under the impression that she might be able to do the same thing. For whatever reason, I don't know, but I had a conversation with her, and I was like, oh, well, you know, in my mind, Rachel's got a very unique situation. I was like, if you have the opportunity to do anything, package, clean kegs, do it. Like, that's how you're going to get in. Even, you know, and Rachel had said that in her episode too, and it's just like cracks me up because afterwards I'd be like, Rachel, I don't just got jobs. Like the one you have. She's like, I know. I was like, you get people excited about what it's like to work here. They think like I go to Brewer Fairyland at Pilot Brewing, like dizzle dazzle my way into the three barrel system.
Yes, and I think, another thing that makes Pilot unique that, still ties back to particularly the employee experience is that you had experience at what, three different breweries of like varying sizes, but like, pretty big breweries,
Yeah.
especially like compared to Pilot.
Oh, yeah.
And you learned a lot as an employee about this is what I like as an employee, this is what I would not do as an owner.
Oh, for
And
sure.
you brought that, your perspective came from, I've been an employee in these positions and now I'm the owner. And I understand, what kind of like these decisions or these attitudes, the impact that it has on employees. So you're a much
For
more
sure.
empathetic employer as opposed to somebody who's like a serial entrepreneur who just opens businesses and then closes them and like doesn't really give a shit about their employees and is just always the one in charge and doesn't develop that experience and empathy of being on the other side of that.
I will say there's definitely two sides to that. Like, I had to learn when we opened Pilot, I was very much did not want anyone to feel like they were working in an environment that was negative for any sort of reason. Like, I wanted to foster that. But I probably let people take advantage maybe a little bit too much in certain situations, that I definitely would not put up with now in my hardened days.
Yeah.
I definitely would say, like, if you know, for someone opening a brewery or getting to the point we are going to start hiring, like, it's okay to let someone go if they're not working out and to not feel like you're just going to ruin the world if you fire them. Because what's going to happen is eventually you will end up firing them, and, or they'll quit for whatever reason. And then that's just more time wasted. And for what point? Especially if you have someone who is a really great worker, but they're bringing down the morale of someone else. You just gotta let that person go, or bring down the morale of everyone else, especially like
Right.
there. That took me a little bit of time to learn to just be like, you know what, go, go. There was a lot of times when my gut was telling me to do something that I would make excuses for, and I don't do that anymore. And
Yes.
it's worked out really well. Now, not I say that I'm still very empathetic to the people I have working, and like, I have a lot of respect for everyone and try to make sure that they're learning what they want to be doing, and that they're happy. Because I do know that there isn't like a ton of room for growth. Not everyone's going to stay all the time, nor should they. But
Right.
if you can get like a year out of a really great person, that is a year of you don't have to worry. And that is great. And
When you were opening the brewery, what were some things that you thought were non-negotiable that you
oh man,
changed later?
never say never is the key to your life. Yeah, I thought one, we were never gonna make the same beer twice. We were never gonna sell wine. We were only gonna sell like our beer, obviously. Like no, like I think cider was okay, maybe some non-alcoholic options, but it was very like we're a brewery. Yeah, all that has changed 100% out the window. So liquor, obviously legally we couldn't at the time, but North Carolina's changed the law so we could without food. I make a lot of money off liquor, so glad I did that. And these are terms of like running the business. You know, I think that's mostly like kind of things like that of like what how we were going to operate and what we were going to present to the consumer. TVs, never going to have a TV. You know, and you start to realize very quickly that you need to make money and you need people in those seats. And if having a TV keeps this guy here 3 nights a week, whatever, and like that's fine. Wine, good to go. Like we're all of that, you know. It took a lot of, I don't know, getting over my brewerness and accepting my ownerness,
Yeah.
if it makes sense.
I think that makes perfect sense. Yeah. Of like, yeah, well, when I own my brewery, it's not going to be like this. And then you're like, oh, wait, there was a reason why it was like this. It
Oh yeah.
doesn't mean that they were excited about it.
Yeah.
You just have to meet your customers where they are. And like you were saying, especially where Pilot is, like in such a walkable neighborhood with so many places. It's like, yeah, well, if you don't have wine and you don't have liquor, but you know, one of the other three breweries within a mile of you does, people will just go there instead. Or they'll go
Yeah,
to, you know, one
because
of the
their
bars
friends
that's
can drink what they
around.
want and they can have their beer. And then everyone wins, and no one's going to be like the dick of their friend group and be like, no, we must go to Pilot where you cannot
Right.
have the drink that you like.
Right.
And like events, 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 events. Oh my God. Don't, if you want to open a brewery, open an event space that happens to make beer. Definitely, like we messed up on the size of our space. I turn away big parties a lot, parties that want a private dining or room for whatever reason. And that sucks. Like, make sure you can have the people in there. The people in there is where you're going to make your most money, is over the bar, those tap room sales. And I can't stress to you enough like how big a mistake it was to not have a bigger everything. Not beer. I have enough beer. I just need a bigger tap room, bigger patio. Obviously, if you have an event that you're counting on for the outside, if you can't fit that outside event inside, if bad weather, that sucks. You know, it's like really thinking about the event venue side of your brewery is what I would encourage the most. I also like the idea of trying to do something else than beer. Wooden Robot here in Charlotte, they have coffee. They have a whole coffee side. It's behind the coffee machine, is behind one of their bars that serves beer as well. There are they a coffee like shop that's dedicated to coffee? No, but they can make a good amount of drinks, and they get busy in the morning, and they have meetings. Like people come in there for meetings, and they really do utilize that side of their brewery when it's not drinking beer time. And they still, and people who are drinking coffee will still buy beer to go, you know, as well. So I think that is the type of venues that are starting to do well with making beer are the ones that can start adding something else that can utilize your space during the time where you're not drinking alcohol. If you, because you got to be creative these days, and it's not good enough just to make good beer. I got a shit ton of medals in my wall. Do they equate to beer sales? Not necessarily. But I have a mac and cheese coming up, contest coming up next week, and I got a lot of tickets sold for that.
Yeah.
So if
And that's something that I have heard from even like from suppliers where they're like, when we're looking for new partners now, we're looking for people who have events and then also brew beer for the exact reason. It's like at this point in the market, that's going to be more of what's driving your sales than just having a tap room that's open.
I have so many events. Some are really great. Some don't work out so well, and that's fine. You just pivot.
Right, and you learn.
Yeah. And let someone else do the work. If you have this person who runs the market, let them run the market. If they're charging their vendors, just let them do it. Don't worry about it. If you're like, well, in my heart, I wouldn't charge vendors to be here, but you don't have to do any of the planning. And that's something I went through. And I was like,
Right.
no, these people are not making that much money already. I'm a small business owner. I get it. And so I did the work myself and it sucked. And then I just got to a point where it was like, would I rather have a good market or a bad market? And at the end of the day, I had to think about my business and get over it and just, you know, little things like that. And that's after you open your brewery. You know, I used to say getting the brewery open was the easy part. I mean, hard part. And keeping it open was the easy part, or it was gonna be the easy part. That's what I used to say before you opened it. And that is wrong. That is wrong. Getting it open is the easy part. Anyone can get money. Anyone can do the steps of signing this off, all that jazz. But getting it to make money, that's a whole different ball game. And control your cost and making sure you have enough cash flow. We did not have enough cash flow. We were naive. We thought we would just sell everything. We didn't have plan for distro. We didn't have we had a crowler. We did not have a crowler machine when we opened. We were closed on Monday and Tuesdays. Well, that quickly changed. That Monday, Tuesday quickly changed.
Yeah, and I think the hours changed too, right? Like w originally Pilot was opening at like 4, and then you all
Yeah,
started opening at
probably.
like 2.
Yeah. And we got a crowler machine quickly. We did that until COVID hit. COVID kind of saved us. We got a lot of cash from the government that we'll probably never pay back. So they'll be the first ones to get our equipment. That's how it goes. But anyways, we bought a canning line with it. We quickly pivoted. But fuck, we did not. And COVID really did give us a good amount of money to sit on and have a little breathing room. But man, have enough cash flow. And also, like, if you can have a partner, you know, husband wife teams, or no, I shouldn't say husband wife, partner teams, someone that you can rely on at home as well, is kind of a great situation, because if you can have someone who can pay the bills at home while this other person is putting everything into the brewery, that's great, because we don't pay ourselves at the brewery. And our plan was to never take a paycheck. It was to like take dividends. And obviously, those have never come. So we've never once taken any money out of this brewery. It's all gone back in there. But we're luckily, we're privileged that we can do that. Not everyone can do that. I get that. Some people write their business plan, putting a paycheck in there for themselves. So I don't know. You got to figure that out too. It's different for everyone. If like, can you actually afford to live and do this at the same time is a big. And I've had people ask to, oh, just make you a living? No. Barely pays
Right.
for itself.
Well, and that's, yeah, and that's also true with a lot of small businesses. It's like if you're going to not have any other income stream, you have to figure out how you're going to survive with not having a salary for 5 years.
Yeah. I wish it was just 5 years.
Yeah.
Oh man, it is. I love it though. I mean, I go, don't get me wrong. Like, I feel like I'm tired. There's moments where I'm just like, shut it down. But I do love it. I love going, you know, entering competitions. I love doing the fun stuff. I love having rewarding environment for a couple jobs. I love being able to teach people and use it to raise money for charities. Like, there's so much good that comes out of it. So we may not be successful in a monetary way, but we're definitely successful in other ways.
Absolutely. And Pilot's really a part of the community that it's in, which is also important.
It is. And you know what? If you're opening up a business, doing that right off the bat can be a really great way to draw people into your tap room as well. I mean, yes, it's important to give back, but you got to make those decisions that are good for your business too. I have had to say no to some projects that I've started in a way like that I did for like 1 year or two, and then like third year, I was like, guys, this is just really not, it doesn't make me any money. It was like a little class teaching kids how to like kind of start a business. And I was like, I just can't. They did it at my space. It took like 3 or 4 days, took a lot of time. I was like, as much as I love doing this, it's not a good business decision. And not every charity event is going to be a good business decision. But if you can't do it, you can always, you know, offer things like sending out those promo gift cards is no skin off your back. Gets people off the into your tap room that wouldn't normally be there. There's little ways, like Charity of the Month program. We have little events each month with the charity. It brings in people that would never come, you know. And this is how you are successful,
Right.
is event planning. So hire an event planner or an outside company that can do it. Whew, because it is a beast on its own. I got like four or five people who do all the graphics, social, event planning, marketing, and it's still a lot. Like we're still like every day the to-do list is long, you know? It's never ending. It can really consume you. And when you're an owner, that's why you gotta have someone else.
Yeah, and I think that's it's such an important thing to recognize about being an owner is understanding what your limitations are. And like you said, like, yeah, I could post on social media, but like you didn't go to school for marketing. You like you haven't worked in a marketing firm. You don't necessarily know like how like I don't know SEO optimization
Algorithms and all
works.
that, yeah.
Yeah. And so yeah, it's like when you can outsource that to somebody else to do, then that leaves you the time and energy to focus on what you do know.
Yeah, and you have to be a project manager essentially every single day, like making sure that Rachel, our brewer, has all the tools she needs to do her job and making sure the sales are doing well and then the bar and then you have all these charity specials you got to figure out each month because that's what we do. You know, it's just like there's no time to do the day-to-day. And if you spend your time doing the day-to-day work, you're never going to be able to grow your business. And
Right.
it's a very cliche statement you hear out there, but it's true.
To wrap up, what is your favorite memory about
Man.
being the owner and head brewer of Pilot Brewing?
This is such a me response. Okay, so.
Okay, I do have to narrate for the audience. Rachel was like thinking deeply for a moment and then just got this huge smile across her
Because
face.
I was like, how meaningful is this going to get? And I was like, you know what? This is the first thing that popped to my mind. It was one of my favorite things. So when we were building out, we have a construction company, a general contractor, and they are responsible for kind of hiring the other parts, other companies to do other jobs, like, I don't know, paint the ceiling, I think was what was happening. So there's this company down the street who they hired to, I guess it was paint the ceiling. Because there was this issue of the ceiling's really high. They needed a way to get up there to paint the whole thing. We were renting a scissors lift to do work. So we were trying to line it up while we had the scissors lift so they could use the scissors lift. Well, the owner of the company, I don't know, like sent this guy in, a worker in, to like come. The worker had like no information, no heads up to us about this happening. I was in the middle of using the scissor lift and doing a big project. So I was like, no, I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry he sent you here. It's not going to work out. Bye. Like, tell your owner, call me. We'll figure out a time. 30 minutes later, this owner comes busting into the brewery, screaming at me because of the scissor lift. And I was like, I don't know who you fucking think you are. But this is, I'm not giving you the scissor lift. And he's like, who are you? And I was like, I'm the person who signs your fucking paycheck for this project. And then he left. He turned, he realized what he had done. He turned around and he walked out the door. And I am on the scissor lift at the ceiling, like high up, like yelling at him. So yeah, that was pretty fun. That's when I was like, fuck these little men. They come in here. And I was like, this is my scissor lift. And then I try to fire him as a company, and because I told the general contractor, I was like, fuck that guy, fire him, find someone else. For like one reason or another, they're like, we just like can't find anyone else. It has to be this person. It has to get done at this time. And then I came in like the next day, and they like got there all early, try to get it done before I got. But I know that's not the answer you're expecting. So.
No, it is a very Rachel answer, though.
But other than that, man, there is nothing better than winning a medal. That right there, that is the moment where it all comes together, where you're just like, this is everything that I have done has been worth it because of this fucking medal. I'm telling you. And I've got to experience, and you know, like GABF and World Beer Cup is when it really, I love winning medals for all the competitions, but those two competitions, winning medals is when you're like, fuck yes, thank you. I am a great brewer. And that roller coaster of emotions, and I know you've been there, experience it with me. There's nothing better than that. There's that. And there's been a couple really rewarding moments, like at the brewery with brewing beers. Like one time I brewed with like the 16-year-old girl, and she was like on the older side of the kids, and she had a real knack. And I was like, come brew some beer. And they like made their own label. Like her brother helped her made it on like a Canva or something, and we like printed it and like small, like made cans for it and put the label on it. And her brother like worked at a distributor company, and they came and brewed the beer together and had like a brother sister day. And
Oh.
it was just also fucking cute. And they like made t-shirts for their beer release, and their whole family came, and I like gave them a case of beer. And of course she couldn't try it, at least at the brewery. I'm sure she did when she got home, but like
Right.
I was just that kid. I don't want to raise kids, but man, I can really like them sometimes.
Yeah.
It's moments like that that make all the bullshit really worth it. So this is a project of passion and love. If you want to open a brewery, you should do everything you can to make it successful, but you got to do it for yourself at the end of the day. And that's why people open breweries for the most part, because I always try to talk them out of it. And they don't want to hear it. They're like, "I got to do it." And I'm like, "I know. I know. I get the feeling. You got to do it, and then you'll do it." And I'll tell you what, in 4 years, I am ready to shut it down and move on to the next phase of my life, and it's going to be even bigger and better. And it might even make money. But no promises.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Rachel, for sharing your experiences with us of opening a brewery.
Oh, you are
And
welcome.
I know one thing, obviously, this is our podcast, so our listeners know us, but you can always be counted on to give a very, like, you're not going to come on and be like, oh, no, it's great. And like, sometimes it's late nights, but blah, blah, blah. Like, you're just like, no, like, here's the good, the bad, and the ugly about owning a brewery. And here are things that I didn't think about that you should think about. And, I think that's really great. So I appreciate you sharing that, all of your experiences
You
with
are
us and with
welcome.
our audience, because I think it's helpful for people to hear that it's like, yeah, like what you see, is not everything that's going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And people do think we're successful because we are successful in other ways. And I've had to be like, no, sorry to burst your bubble. Like, how do you make money? I'm like, I don't. But here I am.
Yeah, exactly. Nonetheless, you persevere.
Yes.
So thank you everyone for listening. You can find us at False Bottom Girls on Instagram and Facebook. You can find Pilot on all the social medias at Pilot Brewing. And you can email us at falsebottomgirls@gmail.com and visit our website, falsebottomgirls.com. Rachel, I hope you have a successful day of being a busy businesswoman.
Thank you. I'm gonna go be a delivery person today.
This has been False Bottom Girls.
And we make the brewing world go round.